Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the John, Paul, and Mike Show!
Paul Holmes?
John J. John,
that was your best Johnny, intro I've ever heard.
Johnny J. That's my at the track, you know, weekend, Sunday.
I'm feeling like James Bond, an old James Bond.
Yeah, no, that was Monster Truck.
Wow, that's fantastic. Yeah, we have a pretty fun guest today.
Yeah, who do we have?
I can see him.
Should I introduce myself?
I can see him.
We have Kaylin Harris, the proprietor of Shatterbox Coffee.
That's me.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys. Yeah, super excited to be back.
We had you on the show officially once, but actually twice.
Yeah.
And the last recording went completely sideways, because technology and all.
Yeah.
But it's great that we actually got one published this time.
We're gonna try hard to take our show into different places, talk more about the humanity of our society as opposed to the politics of our society.
Yeah.
One could argue that there's no difference, but nonetheless, let's see how it goes.
High level social policy, technology. Less nitty-gritty politics and more about ideas.
Yeah.
So let's get on with the show.
Right on. Thanks, Paul. Thank you, Kaylin.
Thank you, guys.
We originally, Paul and I, started this show because we wanted to just... We had too much to say with nobody listening.
That's fair. Yeah.
And we enjoy having too much to say with nobody listening. Problem being, not problem, we didn't get how evolvingly relevant the show became within that municipal political season.
Mm-hmm.
and had a, you know, really shifted towards politics. And then as we're starting to look at who should we get to speak, you know, when we're going, well, should we talk to Andrew Weaver, or should we try to get Christy Clark, or, you know,
yeah.
It was like, that's not who we are. You know, like, we started this show to talk about community stuff.
Yeah.
So we're going back to those roots.
Okay.
And we thought it'd be a great time if, you know, start with you.
That's cool.
Because you're coming from there.
And increasingly, so rootsy.
I am very rootsy.
And increasingly, Paul's online persona and
pursuits
and comments are about, you know, the sociology of what we're doing, yeah, not the politics.
Yeah.
So that's where we're going.
Cool.
It's hard to get people out of politics. You know, everybody has their echo chambers and their confirmation biases and, you know, everything else, and to get anybody to see anything from a perspective other than their own, unless the thing you're offering, you know, meets up with their confirmation bias, it's very difficult.
Yeah.
I would love to have a conversation where we stop using politics as a pejorative, because my background of...
We're actually taping this.
Are we?
Yeah. Oh. I'm going to throw it into the front end.
Sure.
Because, you know, the best stuff is when we're not taping.
Yeah. But like my...
But can you come a little closer?
Yeah.
Thank you.
My background in politics is from the academic side of things. I avoided getting involved in the partisan side of things and the actual, the governance side of politics, because it didn't feel right. Politics... From an academic perspective, is the study of how resources get distributed, essentially, right?
Well, I'm, you know.
So when we talk about politics as a bad thing in a pejorative sense, people get their hackles up. But the problem is that as a community, we have to somehow figure out how resources get distributed. So what we need to do is remove the partisanship and that encampment of us versus them. That our political debates generally end up filtering us into, in order to get to community focused. Like, it's, we're all in this together, as opposed to...
I think that's a noble objective. It's not going to happen. I think social media has changed this equation forever.
There's a big...
I don't know. They're saying now that, you know, this is kind of the most dramatic time in the States, and you know, we're at danger. Excuse me, when those poor British Londoners were running into subways nightly for years, being bombed by Nazi, how is that worse than that? You know, not worse than now. Like, you know, Cuban Missile Crisis when. Well, there is the one real time we're close to nuclear war. How is that worse than Trump tweeting bullshit all day?
There is the impending financial crisis, of course. You know, that could just lead us all into the turmoil.
Well, we actually went through it, and are still, you know,
we're still kicking.
It's the hyperbolic nature of rhetoric, of partisan rhetoric. That gets people into this state of frenzy. It's the media's attention to like all of the. It has to be like the gotcha journalism that's changing the rhetoric into how do we solve problem as opposed to look how they've screwed up, or you know, so and so is being an idiot.
Let's break it down a little bit, and bear with me. Mankind, beautiful ringtone, by the way.
Yeah, I'm feeling very peaceful.
I know this much is true. So, this is kind of
wild. Hey, Peter, how are you?
This is the new John Paul on Mike show.
Very casual.
Yeah. Look at the flip flops.
I'm going to write a book.
Yeah, it's my new thing. Your thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I'm hoping to be inspired. By you know the conversations we have for my book, right? So here's how I see it, John. We have, as a human species, you know, however many thousand years ago we evolved, or we didn't evolve, we emerged from the forest with a couple of skills: hunting and gathering, rearing children, you know, some basic maybe tribal society interaction. Maybe the remnants or, you know, sort of early bits of language and communication. And now we live in this incredibly complex society where John is holding in his hand a computer that, you know, 20 years ago would have been unfathomably...
By the way, can I Snapchat you guys while
sure.
we're
yeah,
chatting?
That's fine.
Because I make little stories.
Yeah. That's good.
Sorry, Paul.
So John is holding in his hand a computer that 20 years ago would have been science fiction.
Yeah.
And so we have all this complexity.
Shatterbox. Hey, buddy.
Hey, bud.
We have all this complexity, and most people don't understand fundamentally how society. I think it's harder. I don't think we do. I think super intelligent people struggle with grasping every aspect of our society because we're all specialists now, right?
I don't think we fully get the impacts of what I'm going to call the information revolution.
No.
Which started in the mid-90s with the advent of a public internet.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the fact that a radio show that about aliens invading was able to incite mass hysteria is already very indicative of a software, of a programming in our human brains that is not capable of dealing with really mind shifting or paradigm shifts and that sort of magnitude. I think.
Yeah, well, and that was exactly where I was going with it. Was
before I rudely interrupted you.
Before he rudely again.
Again.
And maybe you'd phrase it differently, but very simply, in the absence of information and being able to rationalize everything that's around us, and we're by and large irrational beings anyway, we have emotion. Mm-hmm. And the power of persuasion is most effective based on what emotion? Fear, right? And so we need to fear Donald Trump, and we need to fear Hillary Clinton, and both sides want us to fear the other side more. Because fear is the most compelling emotion that human beings.
I disagree. I think it's,
for the purpose of persuasion.
It's no. I think that's it's maybe the easiest to incite,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think it's the most persuasive. I don't think it's the most compelling. I think
I think the evidence is all around us. I mean,
I don't know.
What emotion is more compelling?
I have one.
Love.
Go ahead, speak.
Yeah.
We'll
I've never seen a mother lift a a car off of her toddler because she was afraid.
Yeah, that's exactly why.
No, it's because she's absolutely it's a loving thing. You don't lift a car off the thing because or off of your your laptop, your cell phone, because you're afraid, you know, of all the information you're going to lose, or if you know Donald Trump. Like, you don't see superhuman feats of valor or anything like that because you're afraid of something. You do that because you feel connected to or you love something that much. You see in war, you don't see just like random guys doing. Committing these acts of heroism.
Are you a parent?
No.
Okay, so I'm a parent.
Yes.
And let me tell you, and I'm a big guy, you know this, for our listener.
Oh, we're you on Snapchat, too.
For our listener.
A very handsome big guy.
I'm a very big guy. I'm not afraid of very much. I mean, I know you could probably keep the crap on me because you're like the boxing champion. However, I'm not afraid of very much. Not very much makes me scared. I can walk down a dark alley at night. Not a big deal. The things that have scared me to the core in my life are when my kid is sick.
Mm.
When you feel helpless and there's nothing you can do about it. And
okay,
so I would say...
But pick another kid. Are you scared when that kid is sick? No, it's that connection of love that you share.
Sure, yeah.
That's what I'm saying, is that there's like all of these human connections...
And the emotion is fear, though.
Okay, so here's my take on this.
Yeah.
Because I'm getting... increasingly particularly fascinated by why Trump is attracting so much attention, okay? Mm-hmm. So why? I mean, I'm thinking about that. Where is that coming from in all of us? All right? And I've seen it. I've seen it around in the past, but somebody's taking advantage of this emotion, this human emotion, which I call hope. I think... fear is not the first emotion that causes us to react. I think it's lack of hope. And I really believe in my heart that the economic dislocation of 08 is at the root of our problem, because it caused men like myself, and I'll do a Snapchat picture of me, the 55 to 65 year old white male has lost hope in the rest of his life. Mm-hmm. And the natural human reaction to that, generally speaking, is to blame somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to blame the black guy, the Mexican person, the woman, the establishment.
The 1%.
That's the only thing that can... And so the
big corporations.
So he keeps feeding that. Mm-hmm. He doesn't say anything. Mm-hmm. There's a lack of hope.
Yeah. I think
that is before fear, because I think when you lose hope, you get scared.
But
physically,
but
I get
it. All connects back to fear.
Well, does it start? Okay. I mean, we could go round with this.
Fear has been in politics since probably the beginning of politics, right?
Well, I mean, we got to stick together because the other tribe is going to come over take your whatever.
So yeah, back to the story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm. So tell me now, you've written about this on Facebook.
Yeah.
Where are we allowed to be so infinitely mean to each other? Why are we allowed to do that on social media? And we can't do it to each other.
I don't think we are.
Face to face.
I think that's the general frustration all across the board, is that we shouldn't be allowed to do it. Like, that's why it makes you so angry, and that's why...
But it's happening. Like, I don't post because... I won't post about how I think about society. You have courage, Paul. You have no fear.
Well, and
he's particularly articulate.
Coming back to, you know, this sort of tribalism and confirmation bias and the whole, like, I love to challenge people. You know, so if you know, if you're, I mean, you know, you're progressive, environmentalist thinking guy, right? I love to challenge you.
He's a great coffee shop owner,
not because I think your principles are bad, or not because, you know, anything, but just, you know, I like to get you thinking about the other side. Put yourself.
No,
in
but
the
you
shoes
you, you
the
can
other
react
side.
Uniquely, the two of you.
Yeah.
To but you say to me, okay, you'll say to me, John, I genuinely think that you are a stupid schmuck. And I immediately go...
I would say that?
Well, hypothetically. Oh. We're in a conversation online.
Yeah.
And my gut instinct is to go, really? Well, you're a stupid schmuck. Louder.
All in caps.
And then you're going to go... You're a stupid schmuck. And we'll just go there. Like we're in a grade 8... But you two seem to not be able to avoid that. How come? Well, what's so special?
Well, you have to stop caring. You have to care less about how people will react because ultimately,
then you're not human.
No. Let me qualify that. Within the and this is the problem, frankly, of this whole confirmation bias and echo chambers and everything else. We want to feel like we're part of a group. Right? I want to find a group of people that think like me so I can feel like I'm one of the people, right? And so, but for me, there's not a lot of people that ultimately think like I do. And so when I do most of my interactions online, it's to challenge people to think like outside their normal box, right? And as a result of that, I'm not a very popular guy in terms of like people on the left hate me and people on the right hate me and people in between hate me. You know, anybody who's so caught up in their own ideology will dislike me.
Like during the 60s when we had massive cultural shifts in our world, at least the Western world, there were some very articulate, thought-provoking people on TV. Mm. That we're able to have conversations all across the political spectrum, and somehow that was okay.
No, that's not true.
People
were afraid in the 60s.
Yes.
People were afraid of Martin Luther King. Martin Luther King was going to destroy
society. No, I'm not saying everyone.
Society.
I'm saying there were a few commentators.
Yeah.
On TV that were able to what you're doing, and what you're doing is this kind of. But generally speaking, you folks are.
So here's
you're unusual.
Here's
Caleb.
The answer. Yeah. The answer, John, is the answer is fear. Again, because ultimately there's so much fear about what the other is going to do. Like not like shaking, scared to death fear. Like I'm not a big fan of Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, right? I wouldn't frankly vote for either of them. But if I say that online, and of course I do because I don't mind poking. People a little bit. People on either side will be angry that I wouldn't take their side.
Okay, I got
because there's
that,
so much
so
at stake, yeah. And the world's going to end. You know, regardless of which side you're on, if the other person gets elected.
Now, your aspect. I like the theme of fear in a lot of what you're talking about. I appreciate. I understand that. Like that helps you kind of organize. People's reactions to you and how you walk boldly into a conversation that you're not afraid of the consequences. I get that. For me...
Well, I probably should be.
Well, I think this is... Well, that may be true. But for me, it's funny because I walk boldly into conversations knowing that I'm going to make sure that conversation is as civil as I would hope it would be.
Right.
So, if people want to go low, I'm not going to go there with them because for me... Again, I mean, like, in starting my business and in anything that I've kind of worked on doing is that what I've tried to do is set an intention of something better in the world. And I think every time I engage with somebody, I see it as an opportunity to improve either myself, my understanding of the world, or perhaps maybe their opinion of me.
Correct. Like and Paul's correct. But here's here's the chasm that we need to cross in that... This kind of conversation we're having on John, Paul, and Mike today probably happens amongst friends, amongst at the dinner table, all the time, and has since the beginning of time, since we were in the jungle. But
I don't think it does.
We're with friends, we talk about politics.
That's because we're weird. That's because we're weird.
No, but hold on.
Echo chamber.
Hold on. But we can't seem to do that online, okay? So about 3 months ago, I was attacked online for something I said.
Yeah.
And I basically said to that person whom I knew...
Was it me?
No. No, because you'd know. I said, okay, you know what? I'm just going to come up and see you and tell me the same things to my face. Go ahead. Let's have this conversation face to face. It all ended. It ended. So it's okay to do it online until I say it to your face.
Keyboard warrior.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That has got to end.
Yeah. You shouldn't say anything. You know what? If there's one thing I learned from my mother, and it's something I try to put into practice, don't say anything about anybody that you're not willing to say to their face. Period. Right? And as a result, but, I'm willing to say a lot to people's face.
But 99% of Facebook of online posting doesn't adhere to that principle.
No, I think what you're doing is you're trying to ascribe too much perspectives to people who don't necessarily walk around with that kind of overarching perspective on what it is that they're participating in. They are emotional beings acting in emotional ways, and they don't necessarily operate with that ability to step away and go, what conversation are we actually having?
Okay,
here?
So Kalen, back to this premise that there was an information revolution that started in the mid-90s. Mm-hmm. This thinking that our ability to say anything anywhere at any time would empower all of us has seemed to go the other way. It's actually empowered a few.
You know what?
Who know how to take advantage of it.
It's digital. There's something to be said about the digital media and the education around it. And this is a huge piece. So my example is my son makes YouTube videos. And sometimes we do it together, and it's, you know, little projects and fun stuff, funny stuff. They're not great, but they're fun to do.
Yeah.
And so we post them. But, you know, it's very clear up front. I said, you know, you're going to be criticized. And you're going to be criticized in mean, mean ways. And here's why. Because there's mean people out there that just like to say mean stuff. Here's what you do, though. Go, when you get that first mean comment, and he did, go and click on that person's profile. See how many videos they've made. You know how many videos they've made? None. People love to criticize doers. You started a business. You started a business. I started a business. People will find every which way to tell you how terrible your business is. The seats are not comfortable enough. Your coffee's too hot. Whatever, right? Ultimately, fine. Go start your own damn coffee shop then if you think you can do it better, right?
Yep.
Did you actually say that?
That's the piece that's missing, John. And we all do it. I try very hard not to, but we all do it. We see the celebrity on TV. Ooh, that person's a little fat, or wow, they have really bad hair, whatever. They're on freaking TV doing something. I'm sitting there in my chair watching them, like, you know, eating my chips and, you know, being a jerk. You know, ultimately, who in this scenario, you know,
is winning at life.
Yeah, that's it, right? Yeah. That's it.
Well, it's easy to snipe from the sides, and it's certainly easier when you're not doing anything. It's way easier to just to be a critic. It's the same thing as, like, you can go, like, these food critics that go into restaurants and they go, oh, well, this, you know, this was bland, this was awesome. Can you cook? You know? Like, how is, like, can I come
I'm
to your place
I'm very good
now?
At tasting.
Yeah, I'm really good at tasting and
people Paul,
in.
I challenge
can
both of you.
I want to circle back to the notion of criticizing online, is that the...
commenting online. I don't think some people think they're criticizing.
I guess...
Everyone's a critic.
Everybody is a critic to some degree, but I think this... Right now, we're, what, 10 years, 15... 13 years since Facebook, right? So we're 13 years since Facebook. It's about 10 years since Twitter.
Facebook, that was 06, 07.
No, I've been on it since 2004.
Were you on the Facebook?
I was on
that
the
was
Facebook.
Totally different.
Oh, it's totally different.
Okay, all right, fair enough.
Twitter was 2008.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, nearly 10 years now. So we're dealing with a generation of adults, 20-somethings, well, late 20-somethings up to, you know, your 55 to 65 range, who are now...
But still incredibly handsome, I might add.
Tremendously.
Yeah, thank you.
Who are being exposed to a bunch of technology and a bunch of information in ways that they've never really, really truly understood what it's talking about. So, like, what we have to think about it is, again, take a little bit of a step back, think about perspective. As a culture, as a species, we are now dealing with a whole new onslaught of information and behaviors and stuff like that, and we haven't socialized ourselves to find these social norms that we have with where, like, I'm going to come up and talk to you about this so that we can have a civil conversation. Well, we think of our online presence as being separate from us, and so we don't identify that way, and we don't have these civil conversations. What I think is happening with the younger generation, and I see it from my staff, and I think certainly your son sounds like he's had some coaching on how to deal with what's going on there, but they also self-filter, they don't engage a lot, they find platforms where there isn't quite so much bickering and back and forth. It's
Or platforms where that's the entire point,
yeah.
Like Reddit.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're saying
there's a culture.
So there's hope.
There is.
I think there's always hope. I think there's hope, and I think some younger people are figuring it out because they've come into it. I think there's been a lot of very hard lessons along the way, and there's been virtually zero value and education provided by parents and schools because they didn't freaking get it anyway. Like, they've completely...
Well, certainly parents have no clue what's going on.
Completely missed the ball, yeah. You know, I'm the wired, connected guy. My child is not allowed to have a computer or a tablet in his bedroom with the door closed, right? Because I think he's going to do something terrible? No, because I think other people are going to do something terrible, right? Mm. I don't want him being bullied. I don't want him being stalked.
But don't you have to teach him how to... It will happen.
Yeah.
Eventually he'll be with a computer in a place like we're sitting here at Viatech.
Yeah.
And you can't control that.
That's right. Yeah.
So he has to have behaviors and... tools,
training,
emotional maturity. I mean, like, this is a lot of what I mean. We all struggle with, I think, at times. And this is kind of like this: you're sitting at home sniping at somebody on TV. We sometimes lack the emotional maturity to deal with the situation that we're confronted with. And so some of us lash out, some of us don't. But I think what we as society tend to do is start to, you know, we find coping mechanisms and fixes and stuff. And so, like, you know, you teach your kid, you know, in the schoolyard to turn the other cheek. It's like, you know what, don't engage, you know, you don't want to go there, you know, like that's
so you stuff. Sense a younger generation, whatever we're going to call them, Generation X, millennials. Y, yeah. Z, you sense an emergent understanding and maturity around a new way of communicating.
Well, I mean, I hesitate to call it maturity because who knows, but I would say it's familiarization. And when you're more familiar with a subject or a tool or a medium, it becomes a lot less stressful. And so you don't have those stress responses of attacking somebody. You're like, oh, okay, well, okay. They're just online.
Let's not kid ourselves. This stuff was happening pre internet, and we call it gossip.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It happened, and it would ruin people, and it would hurt people.
Yeah. Now it's faster.
Well, now you can do it without
and
having to be there's no accountability. Like there's this entire generation of lack of accountability. Yeah. Fundamentally, that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to engage people in a conversation, and you have the courage, as do you, Kim, to force people to be accountable for what they say. Mm. You kind of push them into a corner, exposing their idiocy.
Well, that's
a skill.
I don't even think it's idiocy. Yeah. I think it's their inability or their unwillingness to, you know, engage with anything that isn't confirmation bias. And that's the so here's the thing. We have this, and I've said this a dozen times, and I've probably said this on the show if you don't. We have built humankind, Al Gore and company, have built this monumental, incredible communications network that has vastly amazing potential to do amazing good in this world full of misunderstanding and terribleness. And what do we do with it? We shame people, we harass people, we, you know,
we win Republican nominations
We come up with apps where you swipe left or right depending on whether or not you want to engage in that.
I don't know how I would function in that if I was younger.
But now
let's also be honest, though. Like we also use that technology to discover new planets and to discover new particles.
Exactly.
New medicine and
new policy
that all doesn't deal with information exchange.
That's exactly what it is.
It's science and technology, but it's not in terms of sharing information. Yeah. Correct. But in terms of how we talk around a coffee table, which is in essence what your business is. I mean, this is your business. Coffee is just the tool in which people engage in these conversations. Absolutely. You are a community facilitator.
Yeah. I mean, like, that is the ethos of Shatterbox, is that basically I wanted somewhere where people could come together and talk openly, honestly, and connect on a personal level, and just happen to have also the best cup of coffee in the city.
Yeah, right on.
That was my aim. Right?
So since we're gonna say that very publicly, we gotta get a free cup of coffee from Shatterbox.
that's a sponsorship arrangement.
That's all it is. Yeah.
If you go to Shatterbox and you say John, Paul, and Mike sent me, you get
a.
an unbiased, unfiltered conversation.
Yes, a big, big, happy, warm hello.
Very encouraged to hear that a younger generation is trying to figure out how to use these mediums, as well as seeing the benefits of the technology. Because you know what we're having in the States. I know we're trying. I'm trying not to be very political, is instead of embracing these things, we have a political movement that is saying, let's go back. Mm. Let's go back in time to when things were great.
Yeah.
That's complete bullshit. It's the biggest lie ever that we're going to turn back globalization and build a bunch of walls around us. It's not going to happen.
No, and I think that also, that decreases your wealth. I think, I mean, we talk about, in virtually any conversation about improving anything, your biosphere, your investment portfolio, diversity is key. You need a wide range of options available to you, and a wide range of information of
but there's
of
a whole bunch of people that don't believe that, Kim.
Well, that's their problem.
It's
quickly becoming ours. But I think this is where the tricky thing is for me, is that like we need to have conversations with people we disagree with. This is your strength, Paul. Is that challenging people outside of their
you know the difference is though? The difference though, Kaelin, is I like to be challenged.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And if somebody can show me how wrong I am, I appreciate them for enlightening me. Right? I don't think most people think that. I think I'm weird. I think most people don't think that way. I think most people just I have my box. If you want to bring your agreement card, you know, you're welcome to come into my box, but if you disagree with me, there's the door, and I can't deal with this. I think that's the vast majority of people.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, and you talk about the younger generation, and there's no question, there's a lot of people in the younger generation that get it. They understand the technology, and they understand the potential. They've built their system that works for them. I think there's also a whole generation of trolls, and there's a whole generation of people who are suffering as a result of not getting it. And so, you know, where does this emerge 20, 30 years, you know, down the road, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I mean, like, we could sit and, you know, conjecture and prognosticate all day long, and we'd never be right. But I mean, like, I think it's funny because I think human nature is a certain way, and I think we like tribes. It's easier.
Yeah.
There are those of us within the tribe who are the scouts, the ones who want to go out and see what's on the next hill, and want to go learn from the other side of the mountain. And there are people who are just happy sitting in their hut, you know, weaving baskets, and that's fine too. And I think that's where we need to be careful as you know, as social commentators, is expecting that everybody is going to participate in our society in the same way. I think we have to allow for that diversity. We have to expect that there are going to be people who are the anchors of society, the true conservatives, who are like, I don't want anything to change. It's never going to change. This is the way it was. This is the great. It was great then. I mean, it's going to be great forever, and that's the way it's going to be. And then you do need to have people who are progressives, who are people who are pulling us outside of ourselves.
And it should be. It should be. And it should be the supermarket of ideas, mm-hmm. right? And then, and we as engaged citizens, you know, hear them and consider them and elect politicians who enact them, right? Mm-hmm. But that's not what's happening. I think the
I think
because, you know, 80-90% of people are completely disengaged. This conversation wouldn't make any sense to a lot of people because they don't have a context for any of this. Their world is you know, around politics and social policy and that sort of thing. They've never thought about it at all. Right? Beyond how it affected them, you know, because
their tax return,
they got a check or they didn't get a check, right? Yeah. And so I think we're weird. And ultimately, then, what's an election about? Well, an election about then is about emotion. Is, you know, that Trudeau more attractive than Stephen Harper? Is, you know, was this politician demonized more than this politician? You know, and who's scarier? And you know,
or who provided more hope?
Who provided
I think fundamentally, at the end of the day, you know, I'll never forget Clinton's statement, it's the economy, stupid. I mean, people, you know, they wake up every day trying to figure a way how to get through that day.
Yep. 2008, the Twitter...
And that's your core emotion.
2008 was the Twitter election, right? Obama, yeah. Hope and change, right? Didn't really say a whole lot, got elected, and he got elected on this concept of hope and change, right? Mm-hmm. And I remember saying on election night, this guy is going to be really lucky if he gets a second term. And he as it was, he came a lot closer the second time around. Sure. Because every person personalized his hope message. So my hope is that we build a wall between you know, Mexico and the United States. Another person standing next to me, my hope is that we don't build a wall between, you know, but we've both attached our hopes onto this guy. It was doomed. The guy, you know, unless he could truly walk on water, then, you know, he was doomed to become unpopular, and he has, right?
He's still very popular, though.
I mean, who are we talking about?
He's definitely popular.
Obama's
as
very popular.
As compared to the other candidates.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, ultimately there was a fall from grace, and the fall from grace was inevitable because
he's a human being.
Because a bunch of people had placed basically false hopes that he was going to look at what the world was in 2008.
Well,
it was a wreck.
Plus,
it was a wreck. The fact that the guy has managed to stave off bankruptcy and global financial collapse.
Yeah, there's also the cult of the president, the cult of the leader that exists in the States with this notion of the president being a superhero's office.
Yeah,
when in fact it is one third of the government.
Of this government,
and yeah. A lot of Americans don't understand that.
Yeah, exactly.
And so we're gonna do this. And we're going to do that. And it's you know what? Actually, you need two other.
You can just invent laws. And, you know, you hear Republicans complain all the time about executive order. This was done by executive order. Totally illegal. Totally this. Totally that. Most people hear that and they go, I don't even, like, they don't even, again, don't even really have a context. What does that even mean?
Yeah.
Right? Like, we can argue the, and I think it's the same. Clinton's emails is a great example, right? I understand email servers because I used to run them.
Mm-hmm.
Right. most people don't understand how that works. Like they don't have the beginnings of understanding. I think it was terrible what happened, but most people don't probably even get it at all, right?
No, and I mean
you know, entry level, 5% of people are even going to have a context for what it means. And then a whole bunch of people will jump on it because Hillary did something bad, and this is
evil Hillary.
Yeah,
crooked Hillary.
This connects with my
fundamentally
CV,
we thought
right?
the yeah. internet would free society to access to unlimited information that would allow them to get to the utopia that we're talking about, which is that we're all on a level playing field. As it turns out, we are not.
It's true.
And in fact, when it appears that someone is on a level playing field, our reaction, rather than, oh God, I would like to learn more about that issue, is to demonize them.
Yeah.
So, is it going to change? I don't think so.
We were having a bit of a conversation while you stepped away there, and
well, I had a phone call.
It's the new
John Paul and Mike.
Super casual.
Yeah.
I think that human nature exists. I think there's a diversity of humanity that cannot be overcome. I think there will be people who can have these conversations that we're having. There are people who will not, and those people will also be completely disinterested and think it's just absolutely frivolous. We have to be okay with the fact that some people are going to be interested in what we're talking about and other people aren't. And there's also going to be people who are capable of participating in these conversations and those people who aren't. I think the trick is for the people who just decide to put their names forward and say, like, I'm going to work for these people, all of them, is that they do actually work for the betterment of all of them and try to do it in as less of a self-serving or in the least self-serving way possible. I mean, if we want to get it back into public policy or to governance, that's what it is. And I just don't think that the human nature aspect of this is just never going to change. I think
you're right, and I think that's sad because people are more interested in their sports and their all this sort of stuff.
We're gonna have to do a whole show on sports.
Completely frivolous.
It isn't completely frivolous.
And absolutely,
it's an expression of human.
Well, whatever. But ultimately. Ultimately, what happens between, which team wins the football game has very, very little to do with better public policy.
No,
right?
Actually it does. I'll tell you why. I lived in England for 2 years. And what startled me and shocked me and what we need to start understanding is the link between hope and sport. Okay? So folks do stuff and they win. There is an army of people that attach their daily hope of their lives, which could be fundamentally miserable, to how that team or how that person does.
Yeah.
We're going to examine that in another show.
Other than I hate you right now. that's sad and misled,
that's the tricky thing, is because your view is actually disparaging other people who see it as important.
Yeah, this is my point. And ultimately, you're right. You're absolutely right. I don't think it's ever going to change. Like I think the reality is there's always going to be that 80-90% of people who are just going to go through life, going through the motions, whatever it sort of gets thrown at them, they deal with it. And most people aren't going to think about big picture stuff, right?
Sure.
And honestly, like, people get really angry on the left and the right, the real, policy wonks, if you will, right? They get, well, you're Hitler, and well, you're whatever, right? And this sort of unravels. I think it's great when I meet somebody who has vastly different opinions than me, but they're really well thought out, and they've researched, and they've really, they have a really good reason to have them. That's far more interesting to me than somebody that's joined my echo chamber of whatever my political bend is that day, for no good reason at all. I have a far more interesting conversation with that guy that completely disagrees with most of what I believe in, but has really thought it out, than the guy who's just there because,
I like what Paul says.
Whatever. Yeah, whatever.
Well,
yeah.
Or
that other person's scary and you're less scary.
Here's a fundamental human foundation.
Okay.
Is that they likely won't listen to our podcast at over 45 minutes, and that's where we're at.
Okay.
So we need to have some concluding remarks here. Because we got lots to talk about in further podcasts. Go ahead.
I think the point that you're making, though, is that you would rather have a conversation with somebody who has the same skill set and abilities as you do. So that's what you're saying, though, is that you're assuming that then the person that you're engaging with is somebody who is equipped, is has the same equipment as you do. What is really interesting, this is where the difficulty of public policy and maybe, and where feminism is really informative, is that it forces you to listen to the voices that aren't as equipped as you are, don't have the same privileges, don't come from the same background, don't have the same desire to research anything. It's because they have a completely different value system, and that's the tricky part. I appreciate what you're saying. Absolutely, I would much rather sit here and just disagree with you all day than have a conversation
with somebody else,
or not a conversation with somebody who is a completely different background than I do. And that's part of the reason why we end up with a bunch of white guys sitting around a table talking about stuff like this, or in the legislature, because that's just like we end up in an echo chamber, and we are of a group of people who see dissent and conversation and argument as valuable things, and so here we are doing these exact same things. And what we in society do is, I mean, we've tended to anyways, is privilege those people. And again, the difficulty is to look at people who don't want to engage in this way and see their opinions and their existence as also valuable.
Yeah,
or interesting, or relevant.
Yeah,
relevant.
Yeah.
I don't disagree. I think the problem is, I think it's at a certain level too. I've intentionally built, you know, my social presence, for example, I've built it around the idea of not having an echo chamber. So you know, when some big political event happens around the world, I get both sides on my Facebook feed. Adamantly, right? It's hilarious, you know. Hillary Clinton did something terrible. Hillary Clinton did something great. Right above each other in my feed, right? And so, as somebody who wants to be informed, as somebody who cares about public policy, I want to hear all those views. I want to read the left-wing blogs and the right-wing blogs and the mainstream media and the alternative media. I want to do all that. But you know what? Fundamentally, maybe I'm a less happy person as a result of it. Yeah, maybe if I was just a little bit more ignorant of the machinations of the world, I would be able to be a little bit more blissful.
That may be a thing, but I would challenge you. Is like, but how's Bo Horvat's off-season training going? I mean, you want to talk about being informed. Well, just because you value what political machinations are going on doesn't mean that, you're not acknowledging the difference of value structures and the difference of values in our society. You are ascribing your own values and saying that this is important. And I think, again, it's difficult to look outside it and say, well, there's clearly a bunch of other people that think that something else is something completely different is also valuable, that you see as frivolous. But
well, here's the problem. Okay, and I do disagree with you. Here's the problem I have with that.
I actually agree with them, not because of you, but I think that's that's actually fundamentally maybe at the problem of some of this communication challenges.
Let me get this.
We're not valuing each other's values.
Yeah. Let me get this thought out though.
We got to cut it.
I know,
because our 11 people are going down to 9.
Let me get this thought out. And here's the problem. We live in a democracy, theoretically. Right? In order to function as a democracy and have all these frivolous side things that actually matter, sports, whatever, you know.
Oh, ascribing value already.
Celebrity.
Frivolous things.
No, sports. Whatever. Okay, extracurricular, whatever you want to call them, But my point is, without a functional baseline, without a foundation, none of that actually matters, because if society collapses because nobody cared enough about good public policy, we don't have any sports. We don't have any, you know, like none of this stuff exists without
but
society.
But who defines the foundation?
Here's the beauty of it, is that like we've already acknowledged that we are all becoming more and more specialized.
Yeah.
And this is where everything gets really complicated and crazy and chaotic and fun, is that... we have to accept that human society is diverse. We have to accept that.
Sure.
Yeah. And so, if we want to, as a Canadian society, determine that our politics have to be more important, then we have to start building that into our other organs.
Yeah.
And that's where public policy becomes a thing. But if you want to say that the individual freedom is also paramount, and not social cohesion or social well-being or social awareness, then you have to forego all of your grand ideas of a well-functioning, highly informed democratic public.
Yeah, this is the square I can't circle, right? you're right, and this is the problem: is there is a fundamental dysfunction in our society insofar as we're supposed to have an informed democracy. And frankly, and you want to talk about turning back the clock, in the Victorian era, voters, you know, who was maybe a very small group, were informed and did make informed decisions. Most of us in this modern age aren't and don't.
Oh, you can't say that! 90% of the people weren't voting! Women weren't voting.
Women weren't voting. Only landowners, right? But my point is, if we're going to have a functional democracy, and it, like maybe this idea of democracy is past. Maybe we need to find a better system.
No.
Right?
And we'll end it.
But ultimately, if we're going to have a functional democracy, we need to have an informed populace, and we do not have that.
Okay, let's end on this note because this is fantastic. I love where the program's going.
I love you again.
But okay, that's good. Okay. But you two folks understand and want to promote and encourage an informed, I'll call it mature, whatever that means, dialogue.
Nobody wants mature.
So if we can change one person, then we've won.
Yep.
Because really that's... And okay, till next time, yes?
Change one person.
Yeah.
Who are you talking about?
Anybody.
Well, anyone who's listening to our podcast,
Paul.
Who's listening to our podcast and goes,
one's
you know what?
One's not enough.
We got to start at one. Maybe half.
You know what? I think you're getting to a very good point, is that each of us, the ones that are wonky, the ones that are a little bit on the nerdy side of things, the ones that are prepared to engage politically, who do fill up our Facebook feeds with, you know, with high politics and you know, all the rest of it, as opposed to various sports feeds and the rest of it, if those of us that are the weirdos that really like the idea of a well-functioning democracy, if one of us, if each of us go out and say, hey, to somebody who is maybe less engaged, and then get them thinking about these things, then we will slowly but surely win. And I think this is where, this is where the tricky thing is, the balance between civil society and then, you know, government policy goes, is that we have to create an environment where it's okay to have these conversations. And if the three of us, go out into the world and have open, honest, safe conversations with people who wouldn't normally go there, maybe we can get them thinking about...
Correct. Where you're talking about.
Exactly.
Okay, until next time. See ya. See ya. I know you don't want to come, but see ya.
Thanks.
We're losing. Losing.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Shatterbox Coffee. Woo. Best coffee shop on the planet.
Agreed.
Okay.